This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, August 22nd, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly. Glad to have you here at Metaphysical Universe. I'm joined, of course, by Dr. Vicki Hunter. Hey, Vicki.
Hey, Doug. Good evening, everyone. Glad to be here.
Yes, it is. Good to have everybody joining us live, as well as those in the as well as those listening to the archive. Those in the chat room, great to have you. Metaphysical Universe is an educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. We explore and empower the human spirit. We explore science and spirituality. We encourage and upbuild and discuss all sorts of interesting things. Tonight we're going to be talking about divination, kind of taking the mystery out of it, talking about what it is, what it involves, how to view it, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's good to have everybody here. If you have comments and you're listening live, we'd love to hear them in the chat room. If you'd like to call in, you can certainly do that. We have Dr. John Hightower screening calls and helping produce behind the scenes, so you'll get to talk to him and us. So if you'd like to do that, we'd certainly welcome that. So, Vicki, divination is something that's, you're pretty up on. I mean, it's something that you've talked about a lot and have known
near
about.
Near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk first of all about what divination is. And if you don't mind, I'm going to let you give your definition, but give me one second because I want to give the dictionary first, and then we can expand on that. According to dictionary.com, divination is the practice of attempting to foretell future events or discover hidden knowledge by occult or supernatural means. So that's what the dictionary said. It can also include perception by intuition, instinctive foresight, that sort of thing. So what about you? What do you think it is? What's your definition of it?
Well, you know, it's a variation of the word divine. You know, that's in there, divine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where a lot of people use that word divine in an almost religious kind of tense, you know. We're divining knowledge from the universe. That's how I see it. And that could be past, present, or future. But, there's been so many connotations about this, Doug, particularly in religions, that it's bad, evil, we shouldn't know, can't know. But we're divining information, knowledge all the time, even if it's through electromagnetic energy between each other. You know, there's always some kind of divining of information that's not physical, tangible, you know, through the five senses. So
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, let's get something out of the way right here. You know, a lot of people think that divination is something from the devil because it's obviously condemned in the Bible, and I find it rather ironic, paradoxical, that the Bible condemns divination when Christianity and Judaism is all founded on divination, basically the practice of attempting to foretell future events or discover hidden knowledge by occult or supernatural means. That is by definition what the Bible does. All the prophecies, we could even say that prayer is a form of divination because you're trying to communicate with a supposed supernatural being. So let's just get that right out of the way. It's not from the devil. You know, frankly, the devil does not exist except in folklore and these superstition-based religions. So it's not that kind of a thing. It's nothing to be afraid of. And I'm here to tell you, you know, I was a Christian for 40 years, and I was afraid of a lot of that stuff, even into adulthood. And once I left Christianity and really started opening up and exploring these things and finding out what they were, they're fascinating. They're absolutely, utterly fascinating. Nothing to be afraid of. Nobody's going to get you. There's no demons around that are going to get you in possession, you know, follow you home and all that sort of thing. It's fascinating stuff. So just remember,
well, I don't know.
Christianity
is founded
on divination.
Yeah. Well, I've had a few spirits follow me home, Doug.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole point. You want to research this stuff, then you want them to follow you home.
Yeah, you know. Look, we've come a long way in the last 20, 30, 40 years. I don't know what it is in the U.S., and for the listeners who don't know, I'm in Canada. In the Criminal Code of Canada, it is fortune-telling, which is how divination is classed, is still illegal. I think they kind of, you know, have been a little more lenient since we've been in a bit of a spiritual movement. And now it's more down to, well, don't extort money. Well, if you charge money, it's considered extorting for anything that's considered fortune telling. So it's a real double loop, you know. We still have this idea that there, certain people have an exclusivity on who gets to talk to spirits or who gets to talk to, you know, different realms of the universe and so on. And that's what goes around. It's people trying to be exclusive. And there's nothing exclusive. We are all universal beings. We're all tapped into the universe. We all have this communication going on all the time. So keep in mind, for people who have somewhat of a religious background, you're still deprogramming yourself, still debriefing or trying to figure it out, any religion, primarily Christian, frowns upon any kind of connection with mysticism or the occult, which
psychics.
Is, you know, very often psychics, anything. But I have a good number of my clients who are ministers of churches, who are high up in churches, who, you know, they do it kind of in the back door, saying, well, the church just doesn't understand. You know, and listen, some of them are staunch Roman Catholics. They totally believe in their path through Jesus Christ and, you know, the God and the Pope and all those folks. But they'll still go to a reader. They still have visions. They have dreams. They have premonitions. Everybody does, no matter what kind of, you know, cape you're wearing. It's just that it's been so secret for a long time. And I'm glad to know that more people are kind of coming out. But there are those who are frightened. And that's what it comes down to. When we talk about kinds of divination, if people want to categorize it somewhere because they're frightened. There's nothing, absolutely, if you're afraid of yourself, then that's where you go with it, because everything comes from you. We're connected. You know, Doug, we talk about this. It's all in the, we talk about all this all the time. We're all made of star stuff. We're all universal beings. You know, we're all connected somehow, even if it's through electricity. You know, we're all connected. So we all have this communication going on all the time. No matter how your brain files it, every piece of information that you divine through some kind of tool still comes through you. So we're going to talk about the different kinds of divination and what that does, how it triggers, and so on as we go through the show. But, you know, you're absolutely right. We need to dispel some of, you know, the preconceptions about divination that is largely from religions. Having said that, a lot of religious people still believe in it, even though they think they're not supposed to. And that creates its own fear because they don't want to get found out.
Well, here's a
go ahead.
Here's a perfect example. John Hightower in the chat room listed the Urim and the Thummim, which were mentioned in the Old Testament. They were divination tools used by the high priest, and essentially they were stones that would give yes or no answers. And it's interesting that I haven't thought about those in, man, better than 13 years, ever since I've been out of that. And it's a perfect example of like a rune type of a divination tool. We should talk about runes a little bit.
Well, all these symbols, we can go back to time beginning. There was always someone who was considered a little bit skilled or having some kind of, as you know, my Red Nations people would say, a thin veil between the worlds. This goes back to the beginning. Somebody who would be the medicine man, the healer, the spirit people, they would use these tools. And you could read rocks, you could read sand, you could, you know, come across something and the sticks are laying a certain way and they figure that's a message. When they started actually, you know, putting symbols on like a yes or no stone, for instance. You know, you could put yes on one side, no on the other, like a coin. Mm-hmm. Or you could have colors of stones. But as it developed, the runes, as you were asking about, Doug, various symbols put onto stones or sticks carved in them, and they would be, you'd shake them up, throw them onto a circle, and whatever remained in the circle would tell a story. And that's generally how the facilitator would look at that. Anything that fell out of the circle or out of the square, as it were, didn't have any to what the question was. Usually, there would be a question. You know, you go to the, let's say, the shaman, you know, or the facilitator, and ask a question. Well, they would just use their tools for divining the information, but really it comes through them. It's always there. It's just, how do we focus to know what is our imagination, what is our hopes, our wishes, you know, our fears. And it was just trusted that these stones or rocks or sticks or whatever could think for ourselves better, because it's tapping into the higher mind. So it's really as simple as that. It's been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, a lot of forms of divination have changed and developed over the years, but it's still fundamentally the same. It's based on pictures, you know, pictures on something. Or pendulums, for instance, you know, that's something that could move. Yes, no, maybe, boy, girl, you know, how many kids, you know, so on. You could put a needle on a thread and ask all kinds of questions. So this has been going on for a long time, but usually with pictures of geometrics, circles, lines, and so on. So way before biblical time. Long before, we could go back to all the ancient cultures, anything that had a picture of a, you know, something that resembled a cow is back, would be used for some kind of divination tool. So it goes way back.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So runes are one type of divination tool. Probably the one that most everybody is familiar with is psychics and psychic ability, and we all have that to a greater or lesser extent, intuitive abilities. People go to psychics for what? Hidden knowledge, right? And that's the point. Trying to find out answers to questions, find out what the future holds, to make decisions on, you know, pathways, courses of action, etc.
Well, psychic largely... this is where I kind of, you know, really my adrenaline starts to pump up here. There are people who say, I read the cards said. They don't want to acknowledge that they are psychic. They just want it to be the cards.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like the idea of being psychic, but the flip side of that is there are people who claim to be psychic, you know, that without the cards couldn't do it, you know. So there's most readers use tools because, number one, it's easier, and because it is a way for self-learning. And any who does things for, you know, ends up being a so-called psychic, you know, for many years, learns that it's ourselves. It's within ourselves. It's just that we get this focus point. It's something to trigger that higher conscious mind. There are many readers out there who use nothing to read, but they usually claim to talk to some spirit. Do you know?
So that's their tool.
Their tool. It's still putting it something, well, a spirit told me. It could very well be their higher mind telling them that, you know, the brain needed to see a picture of someone or feel that someone. But it still all comes from what I call that universal mind, no matter how we divine it. But psychics largely use tools. I think that you know, I go back to something my old teacher said. I was really blessed to have 3 years of being an apprentice under a wonderful old gypsy reader. It didn't start out that way. We just kind of hooked up, and, you know, it's another one of those synchronistic moments. We talked about that, you know, synchronicity last week. We spent 3 years together before she passed on.
Vicki, I think you are cutting out a little bit. I'm still not hearing you. So we lost. Okay, you're just barely coming in.
It's got to be.
There you go. There you go. Now you're back.
Okay.
So start over.
I didn't. Okay. My old teacher would say that anybody can read cards, but not everyone can be a reader, meaning your own psychic development. But then she would add in, you know, another fold to it. It's not everyone knows how to be with people, because not everyone knows how to translate what they're seeing. That is the key in any kind of divining information, any tool for divination, is knowing how to translate it.
Interpretation.
I mean, if you don't know what it means, it's just stuff. So it's okay. We get this knowledge. We tap into this knowledge. We receive some kind of a message, and then it's going to filter.
Lost you again. Tell you what, I'm going to hang you up and call you back just so we can see if that will improve the connection, because I don't even have you back right now. So let's try and get Vicki back. Give it just a moment here. And hopefully we'll get her back.
We should just do a mic test.
Yep. Now I'm hearing
you. We're back in? All right. Yeah, all right. Must be, it doesn't matter. Internet, blog talk,
Skype,
we've had
gods.
These issues before.
We blame this all there. Always on the Skype gods.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Hey, for the beauty of this technology, it does have its moments. So, and then we get frustrated and we wonder why it doesn't work, but then we have to be grateful that it does in the first place. That's what I remind myself of. So, it does so. Here's the thing. There's anybody can read cards. Anybody can lay them out and say, oh, the card said this, without realizing that there is some kind of energy or higher self at work. Anybody can get messages, divine messages, but the key, the ultimate key, is knowing how to translate it, interpret it, and provide some kind of reasonable message to a client or in answer to a question. So this is where it just doesn't matter what we use. We're going to talk about different kinds of things in a minute, but it doesn't matter what we use. Those are the ultimate challenges in divining knowledge from the universe in any way. So I want to remind people that you can get all these messages. You just have to really know who you are, know how you are translating, how you're filtering that through your belief systems, and try to be as objective as possible. Not get in the way, not have an opinion, but be able to source it out behind your beliefs that something that's higher, greater, more, to be able to give a true, clear message. You know, this is the ultimate challenge for me as a reader, is whether I like something or not, whether or not I have an opinion about it, it doesn't matter in those moments. You have to go into, I guess, that divine moment, that divine space of time, and provide, you know, I hope, educational material and choices to somebody for what I'm seeing as the path they're on now. Because everything can change in a thought. So that's really important. You know, Doug, teacups are really, really famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes way back. My great-grandmother read teacups. Teacups being symbols. Again, we're back to the symbols and pictures in a cup. Higher to the rim, be closer in the future. Down at the bottom would be way further in the future. Anything in the saucer would have its own meaning. If there's like somebody really spit all their tea in their saucer, it might be a lot of tears, you know. So it would be symbols that could be anything, animals, events, you know, everything from, oh, I see a bird or a circus act, you know, and then how to interpret that to tell stories to the symbols, because that's the key. You're accessing stories. Then there's, that is perhaps the most popular one of late in the last, let's say, few hundred years, tea being very popular. And that's in every culture, I might add. I don't think there's a culture in the last few hundred years that I've researched or read who didn't read teacups or tea leaves.
I wonder if the Tea Party in America reads teacups. Okay,
that
was just a joke.
Question. That's a fun joke. Good question, fun joke. So that's because they're tapping into, again, the unconscious and using symbols. But it seemed to be, I think, in these last 50 years, a safer, even 100 years, a little bit safer. It's you read the cups. You know, you can read the cups. People who read the cups were different.
So is,
you know,
reading,
not
cups
normal.
And, reading cups any different than reading tea leaves? Is it the same thing, different terms?
Same thing, different terms.
Okay.
Same thing, pretty much. Someone who read cups would know about the leaves. Somebody who read leaves understands that the cup is involved. So,
mm-hmm.
I think cups are actually quite fun. I take them quite lighthearted because they're usually... it's a very brief reading. It doesn't last very long, 10, 15 minutes maybe. And we hope that it just answers a couple of questions that might be on somebody's mind, and that's it. But it's, you know, when people say, okay, I want you to turn the cup over, put your hand on the cup, turn it 3 times, and make a wish. It's all crap, Doug. It's just all crap.
It is crap.
It's just the
It
is
donk.
Crap, I tell you. It's just that is the fun. You know, Magda would say, my teacher would say, it's just a way to distract people so that they get out of their, you know, your way, so you can actually... Because some people put up a big wall, and it's very hard to read them when they have that big wall up. But if you can distract them with something to do, okay, now I can feel your energy. See? So it's... People say, do you want me to turn it 3 times and make a wish? I said, sure, knock yourself out. If that makes you feel good, then you do that. But I don't need you to do that to read your cup. You know, cups are just a fun thing. I've taught teacup reading. It's not something I do as a, you know, a daily event. I use cards because I like them. I think they're... they offer more and wider. It gives me a greater peripheral view. And if I'm ever really stuck and I'm trying to, you know, explain something or grasp the message that's there, you know, I just shuffle them up again and say, you know what, pick 3 cards because I'm not understanding this. So it just helps me get that energy going and connect better. Cards, but the regular playing cards, and we're not going to go into a big tarot lesson at the moment, but regular playing cards... Then there's tarot cards. There's we've talked about runes before, but tea cups. There are now huge numbers of different kinds of cards available. Fairy cards, angel cards, Indian cards, animal cards. There's the list. It's a big business, Doug. Big business. Big business. So there's always somebody trying to come up with some new and clever idea about how can we, you know, capitalize on making money in this world, in the mystical world, so to speak. Just so everybody knows, when you do go out and purchase these things, it's still all under gaming. You know, much like, you know, it's fortune-telling versus gaming, because under the laws, general Western developing laws, there's no category to put this in, so it has to file under the gaming thing, and anybody who wants to build a new set of cards goes through a publishing company, and it's approved for gaming. So it's considered a game. Legally, it's considered a game. For folks like us, it's a tool. You know, Catherine's just asked a question. When reading using psychometry, is it possible to be picking up energy from the object that isn't from the person who the object belongs to? Well, you know, to back up, psychometry is another very old method. It's not necessarily tool. It's a method, if you will, for reading energy. So if I held your hand, for instance, Doug, I could get a vibe from that. When you touch people, you're mingling, you know, energies. So that is a form of psychometry, but through the object, like if you gave me your watch, I'm going to feel your energy through your watch.
And be able to tell things about me or an event the past event or whatever. True or not.
Because it's leaving an impression. Everything leaves an energetic impression. I guess if we think about the difference between grounded ghosts and just a spiritual residue, you know, we're talking the objects have a spiritual residue.
Mm-hmm.
When Catherine's asking, can it come like second, third hand? Absolutely. There's energy property. Let's say, for instance, Catherine, you're wearing your great grandmother's engagement ring. Then, and I held it, there would be an impression of where that came from. But I want to say something. It's a bit of a disclaimer here. You have the thought that it's your great-grandmother's wedding ring, and I could be picking up on your thought, not necessarily a residue from the object. Did I say that all right, Doug?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So we have to understand that there can be a lot of different explanations. Certainly, some objects tend to... Wood is something that breathes, you know, and wood can leave an impression. I'm a bit of a nut for rocking chairs, and I like refinishing antiques. I won't get a rocking chair that doesn't feel good. So, you know, I have to sit in it, and... If it suddenly these stories come to mind, like the wood is talking to me, I can feel whoever sat in it and the stories behind it, then that's something I say, wow, I really want to rebuild that. Is that just a tapping into a universal, you know, Akashic record or memory bank? It could be. Maybe it has nothing to do with the wood at all. But I would, you know, I like to believe it is a bit of the wood. So it's hard to know.
Well, either way, if you're dialing in the Akashic record pertaining to that chair or whatever object it is, it's still directive. And it's still directing you to the information connected with that object.
You know, yeah, Catherine just asked another question. Is it better to touch the person to get a better reading of them rather than an object? You know, that's a preference thing, Catherine. I don't like touching people. You know, when I meet people for the first time, I don't want to touch them because I like to get it slowly. I like to, let us get to know each other for a few seconds and feel the energy as opposed to, you know, just, well, let's all clasp hands and see what happens. I could get zapped. I mean,
well,
that's what I'm
plus there's ethics issues, there's boundary issues, there's cultural issues, and you know, if you're a practitioner, you're going to want to be ordained. You know, there's some of those issues that go along with touching. So that has to be used with discretion.
But be rest assured, you're likely to get a big hug by the time you leave. So
sure.
I mean, if it's appropriate, you know what I'm saying. So there are a lot of readers who touch people, and of course, Catherine's just asking now about palm readers. There are a lot of palm readers now who just prefer to take a photocopy or a picture of a hand rather than actually touching the hand. I think it's for hygiene reasons more than anything. But the old palm readers, if they were really a good palmist, they would tell you that there's a lot of psychic energy there, that some of what they get has nothing to do with the lines at all. Because, again, it's the interpretation of the lines. You know, you have your lifeline, your heart line, your headline. Those are the primaries. And then you've got all these other things. Now, geez, I don't think some of the old palmists really cared if Jupiter was on that mound. You know, they just would look at a hand and feel a hand, and imageries come to them, and then they would, you know, carry on from there.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
In all these different forms of divination, these forms of reading that use various tools, methodologies, to what extent are these tools simply props or conduits, you know, that, in other words, they're not so much the source, or are they the source, or are they a vital conduit in order to get, you know, a reading, or is it really just a psychic using them as a focal point to do a reading? That, you know, so then, to what degree do these tools, these devices play in a reading?
They're all props. All of them. They're a tool. It's a way to prop up, I suppose, you know, your own access, if you will, your own psychic energy, your own higher self, your own universal mind. When we develop ourselves, we really don't need those things to do a reading.
Mm-hmm. Lost you again, apparently. I'm just going to wait a moment. So these are props, she's saying, and don't need them so much, but I'm sure that they can help. At least focus a reading. I don't know if you're back yet or not, Vicki.
Am I back?
You are back.
They're all useful. I mean, everything is useful. Everything has its place. What I just like people to know is that you're tapping into yourself when you use them. And it's nothing wrong with using props. I use them all the time. So I use numbers a lot. I find that I can anchor in with a number, knowing somebody's, you know, their birth number and their birth path number to see what cycle they're in. I've got a real quick way to tune in and reach that place actually faster than cards. I don't know why. I love numbers, but I'm not a numerologist, and nor have I ever been a numerologist, but numbers has always been a part of the journey. So, you see, numbers is another form of divination. Just so we're clear.
How so? Just to, and I think I've lost again, but obviously numerology, you're using numbers to get hidden knowledge, so in that way it would be a tool of divination. And maybe you're back now.
Yeah, totally, Doug. Astrology is a form of divination.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's using a tool to access information, access knowledge. So that's just another vehicle to, again, what I say, I keep going back to this, to tap into the universal mind. That's my take.
You're fading.
Right. I think everyone has something they gravitate to. You have a better connection with, and that's the tool you're going to use because it vibrates to you. You know, it's just something you're drawn to it. The least trustworthy are pendulums. Yeah, I got a real hang up about this pendulum thing. Any kind of an electrical impulse, and we get how many thousands of impulses do we have for input, Doug, in a matter of, you know, a few seconds going into the brain and the nerve system?
Some people more than one.
it's a huge number of messages that we're computing in our brains. And just because we're not conscious of them doesn't mean they're not happening. So if you're holding up a pendulum, the state to be in to make sure it's accurate is a huge task. And we're emotional beings. There's always a feeling that goes with it, a wish or a desire, you know, something, a fear for that matter, that can influence you know, how that pendulum is going to swing, because it's an electrical stimuli. So if you're relying on something to move back and forth in circles, you know, by raising your hand, that is the least reliable source. I would rather somebody flip a coin. You know, I think that actually has, you know, greater credibility to me. And by the way, then I'd go 4 times out of 5.
Right.
You know? Then it's the odds, and it's something consistent. Now, this to me is where it's really important for people to observe the consistencies of messages or interpretations to know how they are reading things. Like, people may not know that they're really good at hearing other entities, for instance, spirits. You know, they just... Sure, clairaudience is another one. Somebody could say, oh, I'm reading the cards, but really they've got a spirit talking to them in their head. So that's another angle that, you know, to look at, that they have a fear of schizophrenia or multiple personalities, so they just won't acknowledge. They just say, no, it's the cards talking. You see, I think people are a lot more psychically attuned than they give themselves credit for. And I hope I'm coming in loud and clear when I say this. The thing about IMHS that I so gravitated toward, which is the Metaphysics Institute for our newcomers, is that you, Doug, and the school says, know yourself. Mm-hmm. Know how your mind works. It's just that self-study. I have professed this in all my years, and again, having been very blessed to have old school teachers who would just say, it's up to you. What do you see? My first lesson, doing a reading for my old teacher, I got out my little book, mm-hmm. and she said, put it away. I want to know what you said. If I wanted a reading from a book, I'd do it myself.
Yep. Good for her.
So it's you're the facilitator, and it's how you see it. So it's the self-trust. With that trust comes a little experience, seeing what repeats, seeing, it's just, again, that self-study, which is why I so support MCHS and IMHS, because we have the same message, and I hope everybody can please hear that. It's you. It's your own inner development. It's your spiritual development, your human development, your universal development as a human being. No matter what kinds of tools you look for outside yourself, it's still teaching you about you. So that's really... Okay, that's my soapbox, Doug.
All right. Well, and that was a good soapbox to be on, because it's absolutely true. You cannot be successful in life if you don't know who you are and why you are who you are. I've said that a zillion times. And I'm sure I'll say it a zillion times in the future before I kick or move on. So, got to know who you are. Got to know why you are who you are. Got to be objective, grounded. You need to approach things with a good head on your shoulder, so to speak. And so that kind of gets into another aspect, and I'm going to say perhaps the dark side of divination, and I don't mean evil, I just mean the unhealthy side. And this is something my mother actually used to do. She would see omens in everything, and I'm telling you, in everything. If something happened a certain way, it meant something. You know, it meant something in God's grand scheme of things. And I just want to caution people about against reading too much into certain things that happen. You know, things just happen at times for no real reason. So be careful about not imputing some supernatural knowledge in everyday events.
And not to be too macabre either. You know, one of the things that we tend to access, Doug, more than we do love, we access fear first.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real thing about human nature. It's what stimulates us more. It's that, you know, I had a premonition or a dream and bad things are going to happen. You know, I had a woman phone me up probably about 20 years ago, and she said, "Vicki, I have to warn you. I have to warn you." I said, "What?" "I had a dream that your house is on fire." "Oh," I said.
Bummer.
Well, it's like if I took that literally, yeah, hear me clear. If I took that literally, I'd be in a panic.
Right.
Now, could the dream be metaphorically, because I am going through a lot of changes, a purification process, and a really interesting rebirthing, I feel, at this time. And could it be that the fire is representing the cleansing?
Right. So the fire, and I've lost you again, the fire can be metaphorical. A house on fire can be metaphorical. It can be cleansing. It can be any number of things. So that's another good point to make, is to look at things different ways.
So that's when you talk about the dark side.
Yeah.
No, we have to be that dark side.
And by that I mean unhealthy side, not the evil side. Yeah, well, they talked about the dark side. It must be evil. Oh, so what are some other tools of divination? One that comes to mind is seances. Those are fun.
Yeah.
I love those, especially table tipping seances.
Now, I gotta say though, the Ouija board, mm-hmm. I tell everybody, take from a Ouija board, do not do that. Don't do a Ouija
board. I'm sorry, you were cutting out a little bit. You tell people not to do a Ouija board?
Don't do a Ouija board. You know, there's a huge trust factor about who is conducting the Ouija board. Because your unconscious mind, your fear stuff, you know, you can make that board do all kinds of stuff, and then people get panicked, freaked out, and all the negative stuff comes out. Doug, unless they are really good facilitators of Ouija boards, run. It is that parlor game, unfortunately. It's, you know, young kids doing seances, young kids doing Ouija boards. You have to be very practical and sensible and be in a clear, you know, neutral place to know that what you're getting is even accurate. But if you have fears, if you're a bit of a mental case,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is going to tap in.
You know, I don't think I don't remember us talking about Ouija boards much. I'm going to offer a slightly different perspective to go along with yours. I think Ouija boards are, they are a board game. They're paper. They are paper and plastic. I can draw the same thing on a piece of paper and grab a glass upside down and do the same thing. So I want to also caution about, you mentioned fear. I also want to caution that Ouija boards are, so many people say just run from them, or, you know, they're evil. You don't know what you're going to get yourself involved with, evil spirits, demons, yada, yada. That is BS. It's bunk. It's crap. It's no different. A Ouija board is no different than any other method. You got to know who you are, and you need to be objective. You need to look at things rationally. And the biggest problem with Ouija boards is the social, cultural conditioning that goes along with them. And so, what do you get? You get a bunch of kids together, and they've heard all these stories about Ouija boards, and what do they create? You know, potentially negative experience.
Well, I'm glad you qualified what I said, Doug.
Okay.
Here's the thing. When somebody sits down with an Ouija board, it is with the intent they will talk to a spirit, as opposed to a seance when you're just asking a spirit to show themselves, which is different. I think people have this intent that a spirit is going to talk no matter what, not unlike where there's going to be. That's why I say that there's the negative side, but I'm glad you qualified that.
Yeah, because I would be shocked if you were basically saying to run from it for the same reasons everybody else does. There's nothing evil about them. They're just another thing. I mean, honestly, I've got one sitting here. I can't get the damn thing to work, okay? So, you know, this is so important. You know, I've said it in previous shows over the years, but You know, if you know who you are and why you are who you are, if you are self-possessed, you cannot become possessed by anyone or anything else. And the fact of the matter is that most people are possessed, just not by spirits or entities or anything. They're possessed by other people. Anytime, you know, they're in a toxic relationship, they're possessed by the other person or by each other. So I want to qualify that. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of. Your spirits cannot harm you, regardless of what people say. I've not still yet to come across a validated, real life example of a spirit being able to harm a human being. I'm far more afraid of human beings than I will be of spirits any day of the week. You know, so you can't buy in to the drama, to the hype, to the superstition, and all that stuff that goes with this territory. And so there's, what was the point I wanted to make? The point is that don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. I'm sure there was another point there too. It'll probably come to me.
So John is asking in the chat room, Doug, about an otoscope. I've not heard that.
I haven't.
Do you know
either.
What he's talking about?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Maybe John can write in there what he's talking about, because I've not heard about the otoscope. Again, there's so many new things coming out. And again, they're just tools, everyone. They're just tools to access our higher self. The key is in how you view it, how you perceive it, how you translate it, how you interpret it, and how you relay the information back. Any of these negatives, you know, that dark side of Doug that he's talking about, that dark side intent, that fear, you know, that residual fear that you might have, spooky you might have, will affect how you see the information. You know, here's another good example, even among readers, Doug. There's a young client years ago came to me, and she was going to take a trip, and I said, well, you're going to see a young man, you're going to have a great time, so just go and have fun. And she said, well, will anything happen to me? I said, well, not that I see, except you're having a good time. And she said, well, I just went to this other reader who said that I shouldn't go to meet this man and that bad things could happen. And I said, oh, that's so-and-so reader over there at that end of town. Yeah, she's afraid of men. Don't worry about it. You see, the fear of men, or the fear of, you know, young girls being harmed if they travel, influenced how she translated information. And in fact, I'll have you know, the follow-up is this girl went, she met her young man, they had a great time, she returned home and everything was fine. You see, a fear is infectious, like a virus, and it will spread. And this is where we have to be so careful. Just, you know, there's another young girl who was learning and trying to be a reader. She's a very psychic girl, trying to do readings for other people. And this is the benefit of having an apprentice and a teacher, by the way. As I was trying to educate her just a little, she was just all up in the air, having been accurate about her prediction of this couple meeting at a funeral, because she predicted that her other girl, this other woman's friend, best friend, would die in a car crash. She described the whole car crash, but the good thing of it is that you'll meet the new love of your life. And I went, you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's way too much information. She was just so excited that she was right. There should be no ego involved here. And that is way too much information. There's a huge responsibility. When you're divining knowledge from the universe, you have the responsibility of being with people. And this is what this integral ingredient, you know, you want to read for yourself, you want to see your own fears, you want to experiment, play it out, observe, study. That's one thing. Don't mess with other people to the best of your ability. There's a way to tell everybody everything. There really is. But say it in a way that doesn't give graphic detail just because you need to be right. That is just wrong, unethical, and it's just wrong at so many levels. So that's a benefit of talking to other people, trying to, you know, kind of learn, take classes, and benefit from people who have been around for a long time, who have an understanding of humanity, an understanding and a genuine caring of wanting to help people. That's huge. You know, you want to help people, then don't judge them and don't scare them.
It reminds us of do no harm and do right. You know, if you're doing a reading of any type, using any kind of tool, do no harm and do right. Do the right thing. You know, just make sure that you're being responsible in what you do and not end up doing harm because of what you might say.
Well, there's another question in the chat. What is a relationship between divination and a medium? In other words, do mediums have special divine power than a lay person when it comes to accessing divine energy? We did kind of tap into that at the beginning of the show, that, and I'd like to maybe explain it a different way. In the world of witchery, for instance, in Wicca, it's believed that you would use properties, natural things like wood, rocks, crystals, and so on. You know, you could make your frog's toes kind of concoctions to have power to be able to divine energy, and it all comes through earth, you know, just earth properties. Whereas in Indian country, the shaman, it's what really you call it, spirit man or spirit women, have a direct connection to the spirit world and don't need to use all those other properties. That is, I think, maybe a good way to describe it. Some people just have, as I said earlier, a thin veil between the world. You know, I've always had voices in my head, but I appreciate, you know, lighting sweetgrass or incense, or, you know, I appreciate these other things that are helpful. I appreciate cards. I appreciate a better focus, but I don't need them. So do some people just have a special divine power? I don't know. Again, divine in its proper usage, they are divining universal knowledge straight up instead of
glad through you qualified that, because we don't do God. You know, and so when you're talking about divine, you know, it could be synonymous with the Akashic record, with universal consciousness. You know, it's about that being careful not to go where there's something greater and bigger than us. There is nothing greater and bigger than us. You know, maybe bigger there is, because, you know, the whole universal consciousness is probably bigger, but it's not greater. We're all part of it. You know, we're all equal here. We're all part of that whole connection.
Completely. So I hope that answered the question. John is still not answering us about what an otoscope is, did he?
Not to my knowledge. Sure, we can look it up. Here. But there's all kinds of tools of divination. There's more than what we've even talked about. I mean, it can be anything. It literally can be anything. And so the big points to take away from tonight's program is that divination is not from the devil. It's not an evil thing. It's simply the act of trying to uncover hidden knowledge through occult means or supernatural means. It can include psychic readings, tarot, Ouija boards, seances, runes. Pendulum can even be used for it. Gosh, did I leave anything else out? I mean, teacup reading. It can be just anything like that. It's just a matter of, and as far as it kind of, what's come out to me is a lot of these things are tools to help a psychic focus or zero in on certain things. They are props, they're crutches, they're helpers. I'm not trying to diminish them. I'm just saying that that's how to look at them. But trying to uncover hidden knowledge, I mean, isn't that what we're all trying to do? Trying to figure out this thing we call life, figure out consciousness, existence, figure out where we fit into this whole thing. And so that's all a good thing. You know, use it responsibly, do no harm, do right, enjoy it. And if you're inclined to do research, that's a great thing, to research into some of these different things. Parapsychologists are essentially researching psychic ability, you know, psychokinesis and that sort of a thing. You know, there's a lot of research to be done. And if that's something that is of interest to you, then I encourage you to visit metaphysicsinstitute.org, enroll in the degree program. You can specialize in any number of areas. Metaphysical science is a broad degree, and you can take the courses that suit you, that interest you. There's paranormal courses, there's psychic development courses, there's mystical courses. There's all kinds of different things, and you can learn to you know, get the basics on this and then start your research or do your investigations if that's what interests you. But there's a lot of different areas you can go. And the best part about Metaphysics Institute or the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, it's a human-centered training. It's a human-centered school. It's based on the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science principles of belief, the most fundamental of which are do no harm and do right. But it's all based on that. It will teach you life skills, practical life skills, relationship skills. It will help you to be more successful in your life, in your job, in your relationships. It will increase and raise your awareness about the world around you, about others around you. It will help you to be better and grow. That's what we're all trying to do, is grow a little bit, evolve, become complete in ourselves. And that's what the entire curriculum is designed to do. It's affordable. There's hardship rates available. And I urge you to go take a look at it if you're not already enrolled, because there's a huge message behind all this. You can, and it's the principles of belief from MCHS Church. And if you'd like to know what those are, go to mchschurch.org. You'll see the principles of belief. It's an extremely healthy message, folks. It should be shouted from the rooftops, to borrow their expressions. It should be spread around, because it's a healthy belief system, and it will result in people being excellent to each other, to borrow the term from the show, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, whatever it was. You know, it's a healthy belief system, and we need to get this message out. And it takes time, it takes effort, it takes resources. And so if all of this means something to you, I'm going to encourage you to go take a course at IMHS, metaphysicsinstitute.org. Go take a course, because it helps us to have the resources to help others. And that's something, unfortunately, in this planet, in this world, that we need in order to get this message spread around. And we hope you'll help us with that. So, Vicki, next week we're going to be talking about love and trust, how to have those qualities in an adult.
Wow. Big, big topic, love and trust. And we're all born loving and trusting, and now we have to learn the wisdom of where to place it. So that's going to be a big show for us next week. I hope everybody joins us. Thanks again for tonight, Doug. I think it's a great show. I hope everybody enjoyed it.
It was, and we appreciate everybody joining us tonight for this live show and those listening to the archives. Again, please, if you like what you're hearing, let others know about it. Spread the word. Let's make this go viral, because honestly, it's the most healthy message there is out there available today, in fact, period. And I believe that 1,000%. That's why I have no problem saying it. It's just a better way to go. Be kind to yourself. Be good to yourself. Be good to others. Do yourself right. Do them right. And until next week, we hope you have a great week. And don't want to forget, too, thanks to Dr. John Hightower for being there behind the scenes for us. Folks, have a great week. See you next week. Good night.
Good night.